Welcome to the pre-Thanksgiving show from the Diocese of La Crosse, Wisconsin. My name is Jack Socia. We'll be joining Kathy for a lot of fun talk about Thanksgiving and some memories as well, plus something called the Great American Feast, which is an annual event I love to put on when time permits. I just saw a posting called A Friendly Reminder, and it read as follows. No holiday should ever manipulate you to the point where you are going into debt just to show someone you love them. Can you feel the pressure already, even before Thanksgiving? So many shopping days till Christmas. The joy, you must spread the joy by buying more stuff. Then there'll be articles that claim that this year they expect people to buy 8% more stuff than last year. And then, of course, if people are not buying 8% more stuff than last year, they start writing articles about how retailers are getting concerned that they don't know if it's going to be a good Christmas because people aren't buying enough stuff. And then finally, many people give in to all the pressure. They get out their credit cards and they go buy a bunch of stuff. And then the headlines read, "The merchants are so happy because customers have saved Christmas." Again, you shouldn't have to go into debt to prove to someone you love them. In all the years I have been around and all the Christmas gifts I have gotten since I was a little kid to a full-blown adult, two of them stick out. The first one was simply a giant tray of genuine homemade Scottish shortbread. I had a relative, her name was Carol Ann Farquhar, was her maiden name, definitely Scottish. And every Christmas she would come over and she'd bring us this tray, about the size of a tray that around here you'd have bars. These were not bars. These were Scottish shortbread. There was more butter in them than there was flour. And even back then it was kind of expensive to make. No other shortbread has ever tasted as good as that Scottish shortbread. It was so authentic. Things given with a sense of care and love, not a price tag, will be the ones that a lot of folks will remember for holidays years and years to come. But now, let's talk Thanksgiving with Kathy Cooper. Well, as promised, it's an almost annual event. Kathy Cooper, welcome, Kathy. Glad to have you back.
Thank you. I love being part of a tradition.
You are not only the person providing meals to our bishop, but also special events, foreign priests who have special dietary needs, seminarians who have special needs, events, the big thing, of course. I don't know what the last one was you did, but I'm sure there was one sometimes recently, I'm sure.
Oh, we had fall clergy conference, so we had the best time. The beautiful fall. Could you be anywhere more beautiful than area. Yeah. So spirits were high. Brotherhood was wonderful. And the beauty is they're so gracious and kind to those of us serving.
It's an interesting fact that regardless of what diocese you're in, priests do not get a lot of opportunities to hang out together in large groups.
And exactly.
You know, some of them are like, you know, other seminarians they went to school with, you know, they don't see them. And only about twice a year do they ever get together where they really can kind of rub elbows a little bit and just compare notes and basically just talk to each other and see how it's going. So it's not like they see each other all the time. It's a nice thing. I'm glad that you were a part of that and can kind of report on that as well.
Oh, thank you.
We are doing this well in advance, relatively, of Thanksgiving, because there's no point in giving tips for how to get an easier, more pleasant Thanksgiving preparation or what to get or how to cook a day and a half before Thanksgiving.
Exactly.
So we want to talk a little bit about that, but a couple of things. I was chatting with my wife. She was saying, you ought to ask Kathy over, you know, since you were, say, a kid or whatever, how has it changed since years gone by for you?
Well, Jack, that's the beauty. It hasn't. You know, when I was talking about being part of a tradition, I think there'd be a revolt or something if I didn't make the traditional foods. I mean, it's fun because now certain children farm out certain items like a new Brussels sprout recipe. Another daughter does the potatoes, but they're the potatoes we've always had. And now another, our son and his wife, they make the pies, but they're traditional, the same pies we've always had. It's really great to try some new recipes and some new things. But at the heart of it, I mean, really embrace your roots and where your fondest memories and smells through food.
Yeah, it's kind of, I'm just trying to think back to my family. But basically, boy, Thanksgiving, you know, I can just remember just miles and miles of starch. And to this day, really, you could hand me a turkey spam can of turkey or something.
Ooh.
But as long as long as I had a lot of really interesting dressing, I would be pleased. You know, that's the part of it. I really enjoyed the sage dressing and the gravy and all that stuff and things like that.
Right.
It's good.
Dressing is one of those funny things. Is it dressing? Is it stuffing? What's traditional to your area? Exactly. We always do stuff about dressing, rather. We don't put it in the bird because that's really not food safe.
No. You got the bird, especially if it's been defrosted recently, it's colder on the inside than on the outside. And if you put dressing inside the bird and you bake it, the outside of the bird may be really well baked. As you get closer to the inside of the bird, it may be a little less. And it's just a possibility that the part that contacts the dressing might not be that, was it 165 degrees or whatever
right.
it is. That's where you can generate salmonella.
You do not want to ruin a holiday and have that a memory.
Yeah. There's just a whole bunch of stuff we got used to doing years ago we didn't think about that now. Freddie got the flu after Thanksgiving. No, he didn't.
So did Grandma, so did Grandpa and Auntie.
Yeah, isn't that straight?
Exactly.
Must be something going around.
Exactly. Well, because we were all together, so.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, actually, it was the dressing.
Oh. Yeah. We have some stories like that growing up. For instance, my mom, we called it the continual dill dip. I mean, it was like the Amish, you know, friendship bread where you had your starter. I don't think she ever washed out the container. She just added more sour cream, more dill. We have not had the flu since I was a child.
Yeah. You know, I was thinking one of the biggest changes in holiday cooking dates back to, I'm guessing, the early 1980s, and that was the sudden availability of a microwave oven.
In my household, anyway, that's more for warming food up.
Yeah, we received a microwave oven as a wedding present back in 1983. And,
oh, wow.
We had absolutely no idea what we were doing. And one of the first things I tried to do was put a raw egg into a glass of water and hard boil it.
Oh, did it explode?
Yes, it did. But microwaves now, you know, I'm sure there are some people out there who are buying pre-made turkey dinners or whatever and putting them, slicing them up and cooking them in a microwave for Thanksgiving.
This is true. Yes.
Yeah. The one thing that has become a part of our upcoming Thanksgiving and forever shall be so, and I've already bought some oranges and some cranberries.
Aha. Uh-huh. I know where you're going.
Yeah,
yes.
When you told me about this several years ago, I had never heard about this relish. And I discovered it. Everyone in Wisconsin knew about this relish. Except Jack. But for those who are not from Wisconsin, can you describe what we're talking about?
It's just the fresh, raw cranberry relish where you take that actual whole raw, cold cranberries, throw them in your food processor with a whole orange. You don't zest it. You don't do anything. You leave all of that on and process that in with your cranberries. You're going to want up into a cup of sugar because you understand with 12 ounces of cranberries, you need a lot of sugar.
Right.
Then if you want to make them a little bit more fun and warm you from the inside out, then you can always add a little bit of Jack Daniels or whichever friend you like in a bottle as such.
Yeah.
And then you can also add protein. Another really good thing to add to that is toast some pecans and process some pecans up in that too.
That sounds good too. Yeah, ever since we learned this, I used to be, frankly, again, you're talking about stuff when you were younger.
Mm-hmm.
Can of jellied cranberry sauce. You know,
I still like it.
So do I. It's so much fun, you know. But I must admit that making this stuff up fresh really is quite good. And it's one of those things that you forget about after the holidays because cranberries aren't always available in the stores as much. But folks, get some oranges, get one of those big bags of locally grown cranberries, get some sugar. Maybe get some Jack Daniels and get a blender out there. You haven't got to make it into a puree.
No, and you can. You can puree it up or you can make it chunky. No. And the other thing is, as long as you're going to the store to buy those items, get a small wheel of brie. If you put a little bit of that on a small wheel of brie, voila, you have cocktail hour or you have, you know, just a wonderful snack.
And this is something that is not going to be expensive and it's going to be kind of refreshing. To have,
absolutely.
You know, especially now that they're complaining so much about ultra-processed foods.
The other thing people really love are like the flavored cream cheeses and all of those.
Mm-hmm.
Make your own. add some of that cranberry to a block of cream cheese for a bagel or whatever. That's fabulous. Great on a sandwich. Or do your own pumpkin spice mix. Add a little bit of leftover pumpkin, sweet potato mixed with your cream cheese. And like I said, some of your pumpkin pie spice, whatever. Another great little spread to have, or schmear. On something, you know, that you know is pure.
Yes, yeah. We're fortunate that our local grocery store, although not as big as a mega store by any means, has a lot of interesting stuff. And I just ran across, thank goodness, not pumpkin spice, but apple pie spice. And basically all it was cinnamon, nutmeg, and allspice, and nothing else. And so we've been experimenting with that. And also I found, I think it's Bob's Red Mill makes it, it's called almond protein. It's powder. It's like almond flour, but for some reason they've taken something else out of it or whatever. Mm-hmm. And they say on the bag, you can take some of this and you can, you know, put it in a little glass or jar or something, measuring cup, and you can add water until you get it the consistency you want. And basically it makes almond butter.
Oh, nice. So it's just dehydrated almonds, basically.
Essentially powdered, yeah. And we bought a couple of bags of it, and we've been using it for different things. And it again, you know, we just tried it. We made some toast, and then, you know, I mixed a little water and stirred it up till it looked like it was the right thickness and smeared it on the toast and gave it to my wife. And here, try this. And she, hey, this is really good. So, and right. Given the fact that almond butter is pretty expensive. This goes a long way.
And almond, too, you don't realize, like, good almond butter, how sweet the natural almond actually is. So, I'm interested to try that.
Yeah, we didn't add sugar to it this first time. I tried a little bit the second time, and it made it a little less slight starchy tasting. But nonetheless, the first time was pretty good, too.
Taste buds,
honey would be great. Right. You have to understand, our taste buds are warped because we've cut down on sugar and cut down on salt dramatically. Mm-hmm. They say your body gets used to different tastes after a while.
True.
And we're not finger wagging nutritionist types. Oh no, I must have special food. I'm sorry. You know, no, not at all. Our dinner is going to be at home. So we're going to be cooking, and I should probably say I will be cooking because she will not yet be ambulatory enough, except to give instructions. we have to bake some bread, and I have not baked bread. And, so basically, she's going to have to say, okay, now put this in, now stir this here, now show me the bowl, see how well it's mixed.
Yes.
You know, things like that. We got one of those fancy mixers. I can't remember the brand name, the big red ones, whatever they're called.
KitchenAid?
KitchenAids, yeah, we got that with a dough hook and all that stuff.
Oh,
and,
yeah, they're wonderful.
Yeah, and actually, my wife does do most of the baking when we bake, and she does it gets really good. But so I'm going to be learning all this stuff. I'm not sure I'll know how to make dressing because I love making dressing. Whether we're going to get a whole turkey or a partial turkey, you know, you can get like a turkey breast.
Exactly. Yes. They're about $1.99 a pound right now, I believe.
I know. It's really cheap. It's kind of crazy. We should get a couple of them and put a few in the freezer for later on. How many people will be coming to your house?
Well, I wish I knew. Last count, as of last night, it sounds about 18, and that's, you know, that's flexible right now. So we'll have 18 for sure, and then from there, we always have a few surprises.
Yes, I thought you were going to say 80, and I was going to say that would not surprise me for your house.
No, it's a nice, very doable, but I always make a couple of turkeys, and it's a whole long weekend. We have, you know, children coming home, and that's when we go cut all our Christmas trees, and we have a whole, you know, the whole tradition going, so.
Courier and Ives personified, yes.
It oh.
Is, yes. That's good, that's great, wonderful.
Mixed with National Lampoon, so.
Yeah, okay, yeah, right. There's advice we give every year, I should say you give every year. One is about cooking things ahead of time. Can you explain what that philosophy is?
Oh, it's called peace. for instance, if you are cooking for a large group, even if you're cooking for a small group, the worst thing any guest will tell you is to arrive at a party and have the hostess be exhausted and not actually enjoy their own party. they don't care as much about the food or if the house is clean or the decorations and the beautiful tablescapes. What they really do care about that the hosts are also enjoying themselves. So number one, anything you can do, even if it's a shortcut. Sure, maybe grandma had the best pie crust recipe. If that's really important to your tradition, do it. Do it ahead of time. You can put it and wrap it really well and freeze it. So then the day before, you can roll the crust out, defrost them in your refrigerator. When they're nice and cold, roll them out. Bake your pies off a day in advance. The other thing that's kind of a hassle at the last minute is making gravy. So what I like to do is I make stock prior to Thanksgiving and I freeze the stock. And again, that's where you go to the meat department and get kind of the uglies or the odds and ends that, you know, not the beautiful breast of the bird in that, but the bones and the maybe some legs or wings or turkey neck, which is a joke. But and you cook all that stock down with the ends of your onions, onion skins, the ends of your celery, all your scraps, and make a beautiful, rich, rich, rich stock out of that. Instapot works really good for making stocks and things like that also. So that helps speed the process up a little bit. I just try to get a head start. The cranberry relish that we love, I love making that a few days in advance. It also freezes well. So that's another item you can make in advance and freeze. But it's just, you know, and farm things out. Like myself, my family, everyone now is starting to have their own signature item that they're bringing to the table. So I kind of love that also.
Mm-hmm. The flip side of this, is that number one, after the meal is over and the day is done, you got to get stuff either in cold or freezing it pretty quick.
Yes.
Because my wife is a big one on this. I will make some dinner, and then even before she finishes the last portion or whatever, do you want any more, honey? No. Okay. She's, did you put the rest away? Hey, guys, they're kind of like, oh, yeah, I'll get to it.
You know, right.
And 6 hours later, oh, yeah, there's that fish. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
No. The one thing, though, it's, again, that's kind of temperamental. So if you're making a huge Dutch oven full of soup, you don't want to take it off the burner, have a cup, and then stick that in the cooler or in the refrigerator, because then, again, you're building bacteria. So what you want to do is you want to put it in smaller portions. And the beauty where we live, and again, check your temperature. If it's above 41 degrees, please do not do this. Only if it's below. And that is like your turkey carcass. Wrap it up really tight. Set it out back. Enjoy your company. And after everybody leaves, again, only if it's below 41 degrees and not sitting in the sun, bring it in the house. Cook it up. Boil the bejiminis out of it. And free stock for the next thing. But again, you don't need all that mess in the kitchen, but be careful of how you cool and, you know, the time limit. 4 hours. 4 hours is always the best rule of thumb when it comes to any food.
Yeah, you're again, basic physics. If you got something that is of a large mass and you put it in the refrigerator, and it had been hot, yeah, the outside will start cooling down pretty quick. But it will take a long time for the coolness to get to the center. And that can be enough time for bacteria to form. It's the reverse of we're talking about putting stuffing in and heating it up. It's just exactly the same thing, only in reverse.
Right.
Break it into smaller pieces, and then they will all cool down more quickly. Good idea.
And the thing is, too, it also, remember, if you put piping hot food in your refrigerator, it's going to heat up your refrigerator. So now you're jeopardizing your other food in that refrigerator.
Oh, yeah, that's true. And I guess the other thing is, you know, again, if I had this like large piece of turkey breast, right, and I froze it solid, then if I wanted to have some the next day or two, then I had to defrost the whole thing. And I don't, there's some kind of, my wife is very big about not freezing stuff a second time. I don't know.
No, you don't. Yeah, good, exactly. Right. Yeah, please don't, especially like things like that, poultry especially.
Yeah. The trouble with her being temporarily incapacitated is she spends a lot of time on the internet and learns things.
you know, a little bit of knowledge is a danger.
We're learning about, like, you shouldn't leave like cooked rice for a long time in your refrigerator.
Exactly.
Because it can get, it looks like, oh, it looks fine to me, but it could get salmonella. You know,
that's why dating, like for what I do, if you cook professionally, dating is crucial. But when you're home, it's very important to date your food too, especially if you have, like we always had college kids, you know, coming home and something maybe got pushed behind, you know, and it was like, oh, here's some taco meat. Wait a minute. We didn't have tacos this week. No.
And maybe another, probably a rule you've told us is that if you're going to cook something for the first time for company, cook it for other people first.
Please don't experiment on your guests, and especially when it's a holiday and you have your traditional foods.
I had one of the family stories, and this sounds like it's an urban legend, but it is not, was that one of the members of the family, a young bride, did not take home ec, went out and bought a Thanksgiving turkey and cooked it. And this is back in the day, this is quite a long time ago, where they didn't necessarily clean out the inside of the turkey. Mm-hmm. And so she cooked all of the entrails in the turkey at the same time, which, of course, they didn't discover until they cut into the turkey.
Right. Oh.
Yes. Stuff happens.
Yes.
There also was a story I heard from clergy about this. In his family, whenever they made a pot roast, they always cut off 2 inches from one side. And they always trying to figure out why this was. Was it something they learned that it allows the juices to come out, or does it? Well, they finally found out the reason that they did that, that their mother did that, was because she didn't have a big enough pan.
So she had to cut it 2 inches.
She had to cut a piece off the end. And so for all these years, they've been cutting off the edge of this pot roast. It's a traditional thing that mom did.
For no reason.
Thinking it somehow improved the flavor of the pot roast. You know, I mean, it's great. It's just great stuff like that to chew.
I love it. Well, that was the story I shared with you. And it was a young bride. And she was reading, I don't know, Julia Child, where you soak cheesecloth in this brine and broth, and you wrap your turkey in the cheesecloth, and then you bake it. Well, she was newly married. She didn't have cheesecloth, cotton. She had just bought her husband some new underwear. So she, sure enough, soaked the underwear in broth and stuck the turkey in it, put it in the oven. Now, can you imagine her in-laws coming to the house and she's pulling the turkey out with shorts on?
A little tab says Hanes, right? This is the Hanes method of cooking, you know.
Oh, my goodness. I still can't. I mean, I see her, and that's all I think of. It makes me cry. I laugh so hard.
If you go on YouTube, and I think if you search for William Shatner and turkey, he did a public service thing about these people who deep fried turkeys.
Oh, yes.
The rule was, as I remember, you do not put a frozen turkey into a giant vat of boiling peanut oil.
Of course not. And the other thing is, measure. Put your turkey in with the cold oil to make sure that when you lower your turkey in, you don't have too much oil that goes over. You know what I mean? Kind of like the bathtub. Make sure.
Yeah, exactly. You know. Yeah. I mean, they apparently have had people who've had, you know, like their decks catch fire and stuff like that.
House siding. It's really bad.
Yeah. But if you want to see, you know, William Shatner thought strongly enough about this that he actually did a rather long public service demonstration. And I'm quite sure it's still on YouTube if you want to see that in action. I have never even dreamed about deep frying a turkey. How efficient is that compared to putting it in an oven?
We have the turkey fryer. We had the peanut oil, but we've used it for everything else. We've never fried a turkey in it.
Even from the days of the Pilgrims, a Thanksgiving dinner is a relatively complicated process because it's a feast. You know, you always hear about feast days, and this is what a feast is. We just went through it, or maybe still be in. I was just reading about it in one of the local papers in the Indian community from India, Diwali, I think it's called. They make endless different kinds of snacky foods almost Everything is crispy fried. Mm. I was getting hungry just thinking about it. Like, I want to go to one of these. But it's a 5-day celebration, a festival of lights, not to be confused with Hanukkah. It was based on two stories about these mythical characters who conquered evil. Good triumphed over evil. And this is what the celebration is. And they just do it for like 5 days. Right. And I think that's pretty healthy. I kind of like the idea of finding something to celebrate pretty often.
One of my favorite quotes, and I smile because it's Mary Poppins, and enough is as good as a feast. And so that's kind of what you're talking about. It didn't matter how much you had or didn't have. You came together and celebrated. So enough is as good as a feast.
That's a good line. Yeah, enough is as good as a feast. I'm also thinking of My Fair Lady. You know, all I want is a room somewhere far away from the cold night air. One enormous chair. Oh, wouldn't it be wonderful? Well, it also, if you don't have the biggest crowd coming, and also if you don't have the biggest budget or the biggest grocery store nearby, you know, whatever it is, if you go about this coming celebration, this fairly unique American celebration, with an attitude of gratitude. You know, I mean, here we got derailed by this broken leg, but I'm happy things have turned out. I'm happy that the healing is proper. There haven't been any complications. I'm happy we had a good doctor. You know, I'm happy we had a neighbor who had a wheelchair to loan us. You know, we got a lot of things to be thankful for. You know, we're sorry we're not going to visit our relatives. But on the other hand, you know, we're happy that they're doing well. And again, you know, we talk about how busy the clergy are this time of year. From now through January 2nd, they are busy as they can be to kind of make things wonderful for the rest of us, getting ready for Thanksgiving and getting ready for Advent and Christmas and all these other things. You know, they're really, really busy. Also, the people who are stocking the shelves of the stores so that you have something when you go to get it because you forgot to bring the cranberries, right? There's a real darn good chance they're over there, okay? I went now, one of the local little stores, the chain stores, already has Christmas ornaments for sale. And I'm confiding this in you because my wife can't hear me. Yeah. I found a little wooden Christmas ornament I'm going to give her at Christmas because she'll still be, you know, she can't walk on both legs till January. A little Christmas wooden ornament that simply says, "This is as merry as it gets." We'll actually be a lot more merry, and we're going to be very thankful this Thanksgiving. But it was just too darn funny. I began laughing in the store like an idiot.
And I need this, yes.
I showed it to some customer and explained, this is what's going on, and they began laughing too. This is as merry as it gets. It's good. What other tips do you have that will make life simpler? I have another couple of ideas, but I want you to, anything that comes to your mind that would simplify something for people who are maybe stressing out a little bit because they've got company coming for the first time or relatives or new in-laws coming, things like that.
Well, pace yourself. We talked about that a little bit. You don't set your table the day of, if you can help it. Hopefully you can get your table set the days before. And don't stress about the cleaning, because heaven knows after your guests leave, your house will need cleaning. And people they don't really care. You know, so it's just kind of those pacing yourself, planning ahead what you can do in advance, and freezing what you can freeze. And, you know, again, the gravy, all the things like that we talked about. If you can't make your own rolls, no problem. Buy some wonderful package rolls, smother them in a little bit of butter, wrap the foil up tight around them, warm them in the oven, and no one will even probably know.
I was also going to suggest that if you don't have them now, you might want to buy some of these semi-disposable little plastic bowls with lids that you can buy that you put leftovers in.
Right.
Every time we go to this one relative for Thanksgiving, he always whips out these things, and then he gives us like a piece of pie stuck in one or something else.
That is such a gift. My husband, that's why he doesn't like going other places for holidays, because he wants the leftovers.
That's right. And the idea is that you might not have some decent storage. And you can go buy these things. You can buy like 8 of them for X number of dollars. They're reusable. They're flimsy. But they hold up. And maybe also make sure you've got some Ziploc bags of different sizes.
Exactly. The other thing that is my favorite, and we do it a lot here at the diocese, is when I'm making large quantities of food, the foil tray liners. You know how you see the foil, like turkey racks? Well, that does not work holding a turkey. They're too flimsy. If you set that disposable pan, though, in your large roasting pan, you don't have all that work of all that cleanup. And that's huge.
So you mean I shouldn't try carrying a 20-pound turkey
in a
$3 disposable aluminum pan?
Right. Piping hot out of the oven with the kiddies running around. Yeah, probably not advisable.
Now, I'm doing something. This is very brief before we say goodbye, but this is really efficiency stupidity going on. I noticed some time ago in our household, we have way too much silverware in our drawer. And we always end up grabbing a spoon. And next thing, we have a whole pile of dirty spoons, right? So some time ago, I reduced the number of silverware in our drawer by 50%. And you don't even notice, right? Because of me working here and trying to be more efficient, I've even removed more silverware so that I really don't come in and discover I've got eight forks and four spoons, and this, I only have like two of each, and I keep rewashing them. And I have actually put some of our dishes aside, so I only use a certain number of them. So I only have a certain number to wash at any given time.
So what you're saying, Jack, is your wife's going to have to reclaim her kitchen.
Yes, precisely. This is exactly right. But I'm doing this out of efficiency, because I know if I keep taking plates, next thing I'll have five of them in the sink, see? And so if I've only got four plates to work with, two bowls and two plates, I have to wash them
right
away. It's a variation of, it's forcing me to clean as you go.
Right. And I do clean as I go, because I can't, I'm too stressed about the mess afterwards.
Yeah.
But even like one of the big events we do here is the Lenten luncheon. Mm-hmm. And part of that is I have roaster upon roaster upon roaster of different soups. And I have to make sure they're all uniform. So what do? I have to go from batch to batch to batch, taste. Hmm. Well, I don't take a different spoon eight times. So I have my tablespoon, and I put the ladle, a drop on the spoon, test it, go to the next batch, take a ladle, put a drop on that spoon, go to the next one. Because again, I'd have 12 spoons at each location.
Yeah.
So I understand what you're saying. The other really good thought when you're cooking at home is in your sink or whatever, make sure you keep hot soapy water in your sink, and then you do. It's so simple to wash it as you go.
Yeah, exactly. Basically, what I'm doing is forcing myself to be efficient, which doesn't come naturally to me at all. With you, it's a different story. You know, my best to you and yours for Thanksgiving. Thank you for coming on a bit early so that we can give people a fair warning about some things that are important, and also maybe will make their Thanksgiving more enjoyable, and also some laughs. Probably don't use Hanes for the... Honey, I got an idea here, honey. Please, that's a great story. Kathy Cooper, we'll catch you again closer to the beginning of the holidays, and maybe we'll find some other wonderful things we can chat about as well. But I want to thank you for being here, and have a very happy Thanksgiving for you and yours, okay?
Thank you. It's always my pleasure, and likewise to all of our listeners.
We'll see you again soon.
Thank you, Jack.
Catholic News and Interviews. This is Connecting the Diocese.
At the beginning of the show, I was mentioning that gifts don't have to be expensive to be of extraordinary value. I mentioned one of my two favorite gifts was the Scottish shortbread that a relative produced that was just delicious. The second one was a gift from my parents that had a greater meaning to me in retrospect than I even realized. It was 1969. Christmas was coming. I had just finished 3 years in the Army. I had missed a lot of Christmas things back home. And I was sitting in Santa Barbara, California. I had gone to school there. The dormitory was emptying out. I was by myself, making the best of it. Wasn't the worst thing I've ever done. And I get a phone call from my parents that says, "Go to the airport and pick up tickets we have there in your name. We're flying you back home to New Jersey for Christmas." I quickly packed. Not much to pack. I had all my summer clothes in California. The winter stuff was still back home. And next thing I know, I'm on a plane, flying coach, of course. And as we look out the window, it goes from the greenery of the West Coast to the not-so-greenery of the plains. And pretty soon, some snow and more snow. And then I put my little headphones on that they give you in the plane. And there's Christmas music playing. And my parents greet me at the airport with an overcoat, which I badly needed. And it was lovely. I got to see school chums I hadn't expected to see. One of them was my friend Otis, big, tall, Scottish heritage guy with red hair, and he was thin as a rail and 6'6". And he sang second bass, as I did, in the school chorus, and we sang together because he could read music and I couldn't, so I kind of listened to him and followed along. We were now both 21, and we went to neighbors' houses on New Year's Eve, and they offered us a simple cocktail, which we took, which was kind of a giddy thing for us. Look what we're doing. When I got back to California, my mother called me in tears. Otis had gotten pneumonia and had passed away at 21, my original best friend. I thank God and my parents for those tickets. You can never tell when a thoughtful gift, big or small, will be remembered forever by the recipient. Jack Socha here with you on this final show before Thanksgiving. Always wonderful to have Kathy Cooper on. She has been somewhat of an institution here, although she's not that old. Come on now, guys. But she has been here for a number of years giving us tips and fun and just getting us ready for swinging into this wonderful holiday season that is almost upon us. Speaking of traditions, I have something I have tried to include every pre-Thanksgiving show that I can recall here on Connecting the Diocese. It all started back in 1982. I was in my second radio job as a disc jockey at a very nice little station in Marshfield, Wisconsin. And at that time, companies and other places would send you stuff on LP records. This is long before the internet and long before CDs, for that matter. Well, there was an ecumenical group, and it was comprised of Catholics and Protestants, Episcopalians, Jews, Quakers, and others. They had contracted Steve Allen to help produce an LP called The Great American Feast. It had the story of the first pilgrims, which may or may not have been historically completely accurate in retrospect, but then it had lots of stories of people doing with and without. And then finally ending up with Steve Allen talking about things he was thankful for. I played this album that first Thanksgiving at that particular job, and it was certainly a wonderful thing to hear. And for some reason, I kept that LP long after I was gone from Marshfield. Didn't get to play it in Milwaukee, didn't get to play it in Texas. But now that I'm working with the Diocese of La Crosse and this special show on Catholic networks, I get to do some things that I've always wanted to do. And so I took the LP and I copied it onto the computer, and doing some careful editing to basically make it a little shorter and maybe to remove a little bit of the not necessarily historically accurate content, I have something that I put together which I think works pretty well. So if you can, take a break from your holiday plans and holiday rushing and sit down and let's think about the Great American Feast.
You know, this is my favorite American holiday. Of all our holidays through the year, Thanksgiving seems to me the day least affected by all the commercial pizzazz of our other special days. You really don't need much equipment to celebrate Thanksgiving. There's a basic simplicity about it, don't you think? We give thanks for the abundance of the land and for the many gifts in our lives. It seems terribly simple, but you need some thought to really celebrate it. You know what? You need things, like ingredients, you might say, to make this great American feast happen. We gather the people, friends and family. We break bread. What bread? We share one of the biggest meals of the year. And of course, we tell the story. And what a story that is. Our American story goes back quite a long way. There were 24 pilgrim families who crowded under the tiny Mayflower after one of the ships the London merchants had sold them turned out to be the original lemon. Well, the delay meant that their arrival in the New World would come at the beginning of a tough New England winter. Quite depressing. And by spring, of the 24 mothers in the community, 20 were dead. Of the men, 13 were dead. So there were just a few left to begin planting crops. Can you imagine what a job that was? Because pilgrims, you know, had always been town laborers, not farmers. Today, when we putter in our gardens, we have fancy, old rototillers and fine topsoil and hybrid super seeds. But those pilgrims had no agricultural background, and yet they needed to grow enough food to last a full year. And they would have failed if it hadn't been for two Native Americans who helped them out.
I remember during the 9 days we did without food, one day I was washing the windows while I was working, waiting on my first paycheck so I could finally end that involuntary fast we were on. I looked out there and I was thinking about going home that evening without no food for my children again. And I was looking at this little boy playing out in front of that little white fellow, and I was thinking, I said, the day after he finished playing here, he's gonna go home. His mother's gonna have food ready, and she's probably gonna have liver and green beans and potato salad, and he's gonna say liver and gonna turn his nose up, and his mother's gonna force him to eat a little bit of it, and he's gonna nibble off his liver and eat some of his green beans and a little bit of his potato salad, and bite a little bit off his bread and leave the rim of it. Just something told me to call him, and I called him over to the window, and he came toward me, a little fella about 9 years old, and he looked at me real suspiciously. And I said, hey, fellow, if you're going to come here and play tomorrow, I want you to do me a favor. When you go home, you tell your mama and your daddy to rake the scraps of food off the plates and put them in a plastic bag and put them in the refrigerator. Don't have to separate them. Put it in the refrigerator. And when you come back to play, you bring that stuff right back here to me. I was dreaming of having just the scraps to take to my children.
And the pilgrims stayed poor. So that the first Thanksgiving wasn't so much about prosperity as just plain old thankfulness that God had kept them from dying out, kept them alive through the gift of the Indians. Even today, it's not so much a plentiful feast that makes us thankful as much as good relationships, friends, family. You know, there are no words that really can describe the emptiness of farm family fields as it watches a parched corn crop slowly give up all hope of a profit, or a hailstorm destroy a ripe wheat field.
I guess I really feel angry. I think how hard my husband has worked and how we've worked together as a team and how our life is depending on this and things aren't working out. And I get mad at myself. Why didn't I do things differently? And I get afraid for my husband, how he's going to take it, what's going to happen.
Moments of loss are obviously difficult. It's hard to feel until you've been there the despair that comes with a layoff notice. The frustration of an entire mill shut down.
It looks awfully bleak, the unemployment situation. So the people in this area are suffering. They're going to continue to suffer, as far as I see. Now the bottom have fell out. If you follow the news, they say there won't be no work in the state of Ohio for a long time. And this is a mill town, and all the mills are gone. So we're going through a revolutionary change. Steel is gone, plastic is in, computers are in. So we really don't have anything to look forward to.
But even though life is a struggle, I find great satisfaction as I watch people celebrate what they do have. Somehow, when life gets pared right to the core, people can usually still be thankful.
We didn't know for 3 months that we had a retarded child. When Lou got up enough nerve to tell me that this was Dina's condition, I cried for one whole day, and that was it. She's 18 now, and there have been no more tears since then. We got them all out the first day. She's considered severely retarded, and this to us is not realistic either. Dina is very, very open and friendly, and sometimes it makes you think that she has something we don't have. A couple weeks ago, we were walking down the street, and there she was, hi, to everybody, hi, hi. And her mother, being of the standard school, sort of walked ahead of her a couple steps so that people wouldn't think that was coming out of me. And I could see out of the corner of my eye that a woman reacted, and she bent over and kissed her. And I said, hey, Dina, how about that? You got a kiss out of that. And the woman said, not only one kiss, but three, one for the Father, one for the Son, and one for the Holy Ghost. Dina beamed all over. That set her up because this terminology she's familiar with, it's part of the baptism, and often she goes around repeating in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Ghost.
Another interesting fact about the first pilgrims was the question as to why they came to these shores at all. They were refugees, as you know, fleeing religious persecution in the old world. And today, we still have many refugees crowding our shores. People from El Salvador, Haitians, Vietnamese, many others.
Cambodia fell first. It was April 17, 1975. And I had an opportunity to escape from the country on that day. We evacuated by the helicopter. My immediate family, I have, of course, my wife and five children. But during the evacuation, I have left two of them, the oldest, back behind us. The reason why, because since we have evacuated in a small helicopter, and we did not have enough room to bring everyone with us, and including in that helicopter, there were nine officers aboard. And then I had a chance to tell my wife that as a responsible person for these officers, I cannot leave them in the country. If they are left in the country, they must be killed by the communists. And by that fact, we realize that it's better for us to take a chance to leave our own children, and we bring all of the officers with us.
My father's mansion has many rooms, with room for all of his children. As long as we do share his love and see that all are free, and see that all are free to know, and see that all are free to grow, and free to open or to close the door of their own room.
I am so grateful because we are alive. There was a real mass killing. And I am so grateful that we can still alive. And the most important thing which I need to express on behalf of the other refugees in the United States, we would like to express our thanks and gratitude to the United States government who allowed us to be admitted in this real freedom country. And secondly, we would like to express our thanks and gratitude again to American friends who give us all kind of hospitalities and welcome and all kind of help.
What is a room without a door, which sometimes locks or stands ajar? What is a room without a wall to keep out sight and sound from all? The choice is ours to share this earth with all its many joys abound, or to continue as we have and burn God's mansion down. My father's mansion's many rooms have room for all of his children. that all are free.
How we should treasure and be thankful for our great gift of freedom. You know, there's a beautiful story that comes from ancient Hasidic writings. We're very fortunate that beloved actress Helen Hayes is here to share it with us.
My dear friends, I hope you're having a splendid Thanksgiving. You know, sometimes the stories that have been around a long time have the greatest treasures in them. This one has special meaning for Thanksgiving. Two brothers shared a farm. One brother was married and had seven children. The other brother was single. Each year, the harvest was abundant, and they split the wealth of the land evenly. One night, the single brother thought, "It's not right that we should divide the grain evenly. My brother has many mouths to feed, and he needs more. I have only myself to look after. I can get by with less." So each night, he would take grain from his barn and secretly transfer it to the barn of his married brother. That same night, the married brother thought, "It is not fair that we should divide the grain evenly. I have many children who will look after me in my old age. My brother has only himself. He will need to save more for the future." So each night, the married brother would take the grain from his barn and secretly transfer it to the barn of his single brother. Each night, the brothers gave away their grain. Yet each morning, they found their supply mysteriously replenished. They never told each other about this miracle. Then one night, they met each other halfway between the barns. They realized at once what had been happening. They embraced with laughter and tears, and on that spot, they built a temple. Now, isn't that a great story about giving our grain away freely and sharing our plenty? This is Helen Hayes. A wonderful Thanksgiving holiday to you. As we truly count our blessings, may we always share them.
Well, sir, we're almost ready for our Thanksgiving meal. You know, just sitting here now, I get to thinking how much of this is not my doing at all. The clothing I wear is not of my own making. I wouldn't know how. The materials for my clothing came from the plants and animals of our land or other lands around the world. Fabrics were woven by machines I wouldn't know how to run, certainly could not invent. Somebody else designed the shirt, trousers, and the other things. Somebody else did the selling, the fitting. And I sit here and look at our Thanksgiving meal. My wife, Jane, obviously prepared most of it. My friends and family will gather here at the table to give meaning to my life. And their love is something I sometimes take for granted. But it's remarkable how dependent we are on so many other people. Not just our loved ones, those close to us, but people we never see or know. We are indeed related to others in our land and in our tiny world. To all the unseen people and places who have made this feast so rich and so bountiful. And for them, we give thanks, and thanks to life itself. And I want to leave you with my own words of gratitude this Thanksgiving time. I call this a prayer of thanks for the big and small, for the opportunity to live in freedom. We thank you, Lord, for the freedom to dissent, to disagree, to vote. We thank you. For medicine that works, for laughing children that play, we give thanks. For good books in which we lose ourselves, for good friends in whom we find ourselves. For woods and churches where we can be silent, and for loud parties and parades where we can whoop and holler and dance and sing. For rocking chairs and socks in pairs, for garbage bags that do not break, for a window box of daisies, thank you. For the artist's touch in words, pictures, and sounds that give us faith that we're not in vain. For the people who make us laugh and cry in circuses and shows and good movies. For the person to invent toys that last. For French fries and comic strips. For leaders who challenge and care. For good storytellers. For good music makers who make us hum their songs. We say thank you. For bus drivers who smile. For receptionists who don't put us on hold, for television commercials that make us giggle or feel we've learned something, for things that work, thank you, for the times of healed pain, for the times we've been healed by pain, for the comfort of good neighbors and the kindness of strangers. For the smell and taste of morning coffee, for the long talks with good friends, for children bathed and bedded, for good red wine and feisty long conversations, we thank you. For the burning leaves of long autumn evenings and for the brilliant winter sun on snowy roofs, for favorite magazines, and for an open fire and long Sunday afternoons, thank you, Lord. For those who really listen, we especially thank you. And thank you for those who visit the lonely and clothe the naked and feed the hungry. Not just because it's a mandate from on high, but because that's the way they want to live, helping others. Those who have given us the freedom to make our own mistakes and learn to love life at first hand. For the smell of barbecued ribs, the quiet time before the dawn, and for block parties where new arrivals find they've come home. For ministers and priests and rabbis who live what they believe. For doctors and nurses who not only cure, but care. For parents who speak love and show it.
Thank you for my mommy and daddy, my little puppy who's almost six.
Thanks for a cheeseburger with everything on it and a good crossword puzzle and for sleeping late and the luxury to choose to now and then. Thanks for a shady tree in summer's heat, for iced drinks, for the electricity of laughter and the power of good thinking. Thank you for the courage to say the word sorry and the strength and forgiveness that reflects your mercy. Thank you for fancy foods and simple foods and frozen foods in the sense to know when we've had enough of them. Thank you for the quiet marvels of all of life, for the gatherings of weddings that make us cry with joy and the gatherings of funerals that make us cry in shared sorrow and not despair. Thank you for short agendas and small committees. Thank you for rocket ships and fireworks. Thank you for short lines at the stores and for finding a $10 bill in a long unused jacket. Thank you for the amazing jigsaw of life. May we always love the questions and not be so sure about the answers. Thanks for bologna or bologna or both. For window shopping, for sparkling old wine, for the majesty of cats. Thank you for the special people we meet so seldom, and yet when we do, we feel that we've never been apart from them. Thanks for a children's playground without fights and tears, for dolls that don't have to blink or make a noise, but just silently give comfort. Thank you for radios that inform and do not blare, for chocolates and jokes and for funny hats. Thank you for giving us patience with others, but especially with ourselves. Thank you for undelayed airplane flights and safe arrivals for travelers and for all the unseen people that make a city work. Thank you for our places of worship, of work, and of love. Thank you for poets and practical mechanics and for a favorite old pair of slippers. Thank you, Lord, for all the gifts we have in abundance, large and small. May we receive them well and take our time to say the thank yous. And we do thank you. And so, friends, whether you're a part of a big gathering or not this particular Thanksgiving holiday, why not stop a while and count those blessings? There are many others that you could add to the list. And take your time to say the thank yous. This is Steve Allen, and this has been the Great American Feast. And a very happy Thanksgiving to you.
Steve Allen and the Great American Feast, an ecumenical offering from all kinds of different faiths produced quite a few years ago. Just a reminder that this show will be archived at diolc.org/connecting. It's an MP3 file. You can either download it or listen to it. So if you want to download this and save a copy of this to play perhaps around Thanksgiving, you're certainly welcome to do so. I will see you next week. We're going to have Bishop Callahan on, and then pretty soon the race into Advent. What a wonderful but very short Advent it's going to be. We're going to try to drop in as much stuff as we can in those very, very brief weekends. It seems like it's almost time to start putting up a Christmas tree, and before you know it, you'll be thinking about taking it down again. It's going to come so quick. Try to enjoy as much of it as you can, as I will enjoy helping to produce these radio shows for you. It's a great part of my life, and I am thankful for you for listening, and thank you for the opportunity to be with you. See you next week.